Throughout the ages, there has been a rich variety of occult systems and practices. However, it doesn't matter whether one follows Western paths of magic or Eastern paths of magic, white magic or black magic. There is one factor that is common to all magicians: the act of shirk. Shirk is an Arabic word and Islamic term that means the act of associating partners with God or assigning God's divine attributes to other than God. In this video, we are going to see this is by no means a coincidence and that Islam reveals the dark truth behind this phenomenon. Of the Abrahamic traditions, it is only Islam that equips people with knowledge of the true nature of magic. The Quran warns mankind about the price that magicians must pay when dabbling in the dark art. It was not Solomon who disbelieved, but the devils disbelieved, teaching people magic. Whoever purchased the magic would not have in the hereafter any share, and wretched is that for which they sold themselves, if they only knew. Here the Quran informs us that magicians work with devils from among the jinn at the cost of their own hereafter, essentially damning themselves and selling their souls in the process. We can see that the practice of magic carries with it the gravest of consequences, so it must be an action that is most severe in terms of evil. The Quran clarifies what this action is when it tells us that the only unforgivable sin, assuming that no repentance is made before death, is the act of shirk. Indeed, God does not forgive association with him, but he forgives what is less than that for whom he wills. The Prophet Muhammad, upon whom be peace, himself highlighted this link between magic and shirk when he said, "Whoever does magic has committed shirk." Let's now put this claim of shirk being foundational in magic to the test by analysing some occult practices that are not only popular among magicians, but also happen to be widely practised by the general public. The first example is yoga. Yoga is an ancient tradition originating from India and arguably its greatest cultural export, with millions of people the world over practising it. Most people take part in yoga believing it to be nothing more than a set of postures and breathing exercises designed to achieve a healthy mind and body. The reality is that yoga is steeped in polytheism. The goal of yoga is to unite oneself with God in a pantheistic sense. Even the postures and mantras, or chants, are designed to venerate the various Hindu gods. The second example is astrology, which is the idea that the movement of celestial objects provide insight into human affairs and world events. Astrology permeates both Eastern and Western culture, with virtually every child growing up knowing their star sign and newspapers containing horoscope readings. Belief in astrology constitutes shirk because Islam teaches that God alone has knowledge of the unseen. The third example is mudras, which are ritual hand gestures originating in Eastern traditions such as Buddhism. They are believed to bestow God's powers and qualities on a person by channeling divine energy. These gestures have been popularized in recent times through entertainment and certain social media personalities. Mudras are considered to be a form of shirk in Islam because God's attributes, such as his power and wisdom, belong to him alone. We can see that even the most seemingly innocent of occult practices, undertaken by millions the world over, are steeped in shirk. This is in fact the case with all occult systems and practices, as concluded by Wouter Hanegraaff, a professor of the history of Hermetic philosophy. In his work, Esotericism and the Academy, he analysed various esoteric traditions and found that there are two principles common to all esoteric traditions. Firstly, a rejection of the classical theological doctrine of creatio ex nihilo, which means creation from nothing, as the world is considered to be co-eternal with God. This basic idea manifests itself in a number of ways, such as emanationism, which is the notion that our souls pour forth from God, and pantheism, the notion that the world is God. In their different ways, all these variations amount to deification of the creation. Secondly, the belief that human beings can achieve direct experiential knowledge of the divine, which is a concept known as gnosis. This is unlike classical monotheism, in which humanity is dependent on God revealing himself. We can see that not only is shirk prevalent throughout the occult, but it's also the worst kind of shirk. It's one thing to worship an image or idol besides God. It's even worse to believe that God is present throughout the creation, because that makes an idol out of everything. All of this is exactly what we'd expect to find if Satan and his devils are behind magic, just as Islam claims, because their diabolical aim is for mankind to hold the worst of beliefs that will doom them to hell. This concept of deifying the creation can even be used as a moral justification to carry out the vilest and most evil of actions. Take, for example, the Aghori, a small sect within Hinduism. The Aghori reject societal norms of morality because dualistic concepts such as good versus evil and pure versus impure divide the creation, which goes against their belief that God is manifest in everything. Since God is believed to be present in everything, then all things are in unity, and hence there is no distinction between good and evil, or pure and impure, because all things emanate from God. The Aghori apply this philosophy to their everyday actions, going to extremes such as cannibalizing the dead, having sex with corpses, and consuming feces. They claim that by carrying out such actions, they gain immense mystical powers. Now, many Hindus may reject the Aghori by arguing that they are extremists whose actions go against Orthodox Hinduism. The problem with this objection is that the Aghori have simply taken the Hindu belief of unity of existence to its logical conclusion, because if everything is one, then moral categories such as good and evil and pure and impure go against this unity. The mainstream Hindu sage, Sadhguru, fully acknowledges that the practices of the Aghori are a perfectly valid path within Hinduism.
As a spiritual process, also it is a possibility. But most people may not get there because most people do not have that kind of perseverance, nor do they have that kind of courage, nor are they capable of handling disgust. Because you have to do the most disgusting things in the Aghori path. But they are done by people who want to acquire certain powers to dominate life, to dominate other human beings.
As we can see, shirk is not just restricted to the theoretical and spiritual realms. It can have real-world repercussions in day-to-day life. Now, the shirk that is prevalent in magic is not just present in systems and practices that originate in polytheistic cultures and religions such as Hinduism and Buddhism. Even magicians who operate within an Abrahamic paradigm also happen to fall into similar forms of shirk. Within Judaism, there is a mystical offshoot known as the Kabbalah, which has the concept of God as Ein Sof, a Hebrew phrase meaning boundless or infinite. Ein Sof is believed to be God's concealed essence, who is unknowable to the world. Ein Sof interacts with the world via the 10 sephirot, or emanations, through which God is said to reveal himself. Now, Kabbalists may reject all charges of polytheism by arguing that these emanations are just attributes of the one God, and therefore they are perfectly in line with the monotheism of Orthodox Judaism. But the reality is that when one reads the Zohar, which is the foundational text of Kabbalah, it is polytheistic to the core. The king, who is Abba, said to Immah, "Did I not tell you that Adam was going to sin? Why did you create him?" Here, two of the emanations of God, Abba, meaning father, and Immah, meaning mother, which are believed to be associated with the male and female divine aspects respectively, are depicted as two distinct beings with separate and opposing wills. This is clearly a polytheistic depiction of God, which is at odds with the monotheism of the Old Testament. Magicians who operate within a Christian paradigm also fall into shirk. Let's take the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn as an example. The Golden Dawn was founded in the late 19th century and was a secret society devoted to the study and practice of the occult. They have been hugely influential in Western esotericism, with virtually every modern-day tradition having been influenced by them. Their former members have since written books exposing the magical order's secret teachings. During rituals, members of the Golden Dawn would call upon the God of Abraham and invoke angels for protection against harmful spirits.
Behind me, the great archangel Gabriel.
They even made use of Christian symbolism. Here is one of their symbols, known as the Rosy Cross. It has the motto, "The Master Jesus Christ, God and Man." When members worked their way up through the various magical grades, one of the oaths they had to take was, "I, a member of the body of Christ, do this day spiritually bind myself, even as I am now bound physically upon the cross of suffering." Despite the fact that magicians within the Golden Dawn operated within a Christian paradigm, they also committed acts that even Orthodox Trinitarian Christians would consider to be polytheistic. For example, during rituals, they would assume god forms, which involved visualizing themselves embodying Egyptian deities to channel divine energy and put it to use. Muslim magicians also inevitably fall into shirk. Among Muslim sects, it is the Sufis who are the most learned when it comes to mysticism. Sufism has the concept of Wahdatul Wujud, meaning unity of being, which is the idea that there is only one ultimate, indivisible reality, and everything in existence is a manifestation of that singular reality, which is God. Even magicians outside of the Muslim tradition acknowledge the expertise of Sufi mystics. In fact, some of the most influential occultists in history have studied under Sufi masters. For example, the notorious English magician Aleister Crowley stated in his autobiography regarding his travels in North Africa, "My Sheikh was profoundly versed in the mysticism and magic of Islam and had no hesitation in providing me with books and manuscripts on the Arabic Kabbalah. From this man, I learnt also many of the secrets of the Sidi Aissawa." Here, Sidi Aissawa is a reference to a Sufi tariqa, or mystical school. Aleister Crowley's magical curriculum even recommends that students read Sufi poetry generally. In the following audio clip, a learned Buddhist magician states that Sufism is one of the few authentic magical traditions in the world today.
"I first looked at Sufism when I got out of the Western occult path, because Sufism clearly is based on a lineage from sheikh to sheikh to sheikh going back. If there is an authentic spiritual tradition, I would recommend Sufism as being one that is reliable."
In conclusion, the fact that shirk is the common denominator that underpins the occult proves that there is a mastermind behind it all. Had the various occult systems and practices developed randomly or without direction, then you would expect there to exist practices and systems that fall into both polytheistic and monotheistic paradigms. But reality proves the opposite is the case. Even those practitioners who start out in the Abrahamic traditions end up falling into the worst kinds of shirk. This is by no means an accident, as the driving force behind magic is Satan and his devils, who will only work with magicians on the condition that they commit shirk, just as Islam claims. To learn more about the occult from an Islamic perspective, please download your free copy of the book, The Forbidden Prophecies, at the link below.